as Plains Board of Education Greg Delancey. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Here.
Mr. Betts?
Here.
Mr. Dobbs? Mr. Mason?
Here.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Here.
Mr. Detweiler and I are also here.
Congratulations. Mrs. Zanikas, would you leave us?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We do not have a sign up for public communication, so we will move on to board work session.
And we have two items up front. As we have two executive sessions, I've asked the board if they'll allow us to have these two presentations done in your board work session. So we can get them completed. First up, we will ask Mr. Miller, Mrs. Legault, to speak on our student recognition for the summer reading program.
Hello, how are you guys?
How are you?
So one thing we want to kind of touch on is Kids Read Now. It's a summer reading program. I'm not sure how many of you heard about it. It was a partnership that we went into with Madison, Champaign County, other superintendents throughout the ESC consortium. And Tim came back with the idea where the county county superintendents all talked about it. And we received grant money through the Dolly Parton Foundation, which is supporting early literacy. So we received grant monies on these books that we wanted to present. So the program, it's a summer reading program to really try to stop that summer slide when kids aren't in school for 2 to 3 months. And it's available for any student in grades K to three. And in that process, each student gets to pick 9 books. 3 of them were delivered here to school by the end of the school year and sent home with the students. And then the parent or guardian throughout the summer can contact the Kid Read Now to get those new books shipped directly to the home. And all of this is to no cost to the students. Go ahead, Todd. So when we kind of look at the timeline of what happened in 2016, in the late fall, the superintendent started talking about that through the ESC. Do we want to do this? And then we had to wait to see if the grant monies were approved, which we did then eventually get our grant money. So in the winter, we found out that we were received a certain amount of grant money, so Tim came back, and in our SAT team, that's where we started talking about what grade levels do we want to target. Because as much as we would like to target them all, there is still a cost associated with the program, and we only have a certain amount of grant monies we can use. So we decided in that first year that we were going to target second grade because of that upcoming third grade reading guarantee to provide these as a service to our students exiting second grade and entering into third grade. We actually also used it for one additional student that we had to provide due to his IEP. We were provided extended school year services in the summer, and so we provided this program, and I am glad to say on that individual student also completed the program as well. So that we had the parent participation in that one as well. The part that kind of caught us a little bit on the timeline, which you'll understand, I think I've shown some of the data and what we can do to target this to make it better. It wasn't until late April that I heard from Kids Read Now, and we actually got our student registration forms. So we got those in the school late April. You guys know we were done May 18th.
Right.
So we were under a pretty tight timeline. So they sent us the box of registration forms. We got boxes of prizes for kids bringing back registration forms. But each of the books that were available, and there were over 150 books, they actually sent to school 150 books. So the students were able to handle each individual book when they were choosing the books. And our second grade teacher stepped up to the plate when I got these and said, hey, guess what, tomorrow we need all of your students and this is how we're gonna do it. So we went down and we organized in the cafeteria the books by reading levels, set up times with the teachers, and the teachers came down to help support the kids to pick appropriate books. And the excitement watching these kids walk in and look at these 150 books that they got to choose for their summer reading. Once we got that part done, the kids had to choose the books. They took them home. Parents were supposed to sign and give permission for us to use their information for data collection. And then we had to go and hand enter all of these students into the system. So between Brad and myself and Shelly and Shelly, we got them all entered. And it was, we were able to do it relatively quickly, but we got all the information in. And then the company said, sends me an email and said, okay, we have all your information, we're gonna deliver it on June 2nd. I called the company and said, that doesn't work, school's out May 18th. And May 16th, they hand wrote those books to us. And they were prepackaged in little plastic bags with the kid's name, what their selections were. And it wasn't just the books, there were discussion questions so parents could engage with the text with their children at home. Just those original three. As they continued to ship them, then those came with those books as well. 70% of our parents now, that's why I said I wanted you to understand that timeline so you would understand some of our participation. We still had 70% of our parents who signed that and sent it back. All that the parents had to do to give us permission to enter their students, the only part that the parent getting their permission is that now we can track their data. Kids Read Now is not asking for student information as far as I'm going to share what happened with the student. What they're going to do is they're going to start to help track these students over time and as a service back to the district to provide the students like analytics of what's happening with our students and are they making progress as a result of being able to have this opportunity. So this 30% of our students whose parents didn't sign off, their student data cannot be tracked because the parents didn't give us permission to do so. But we were able to go in and auto select for those kids to still be enrolled in the system. And really it was pretty even on the kids whose parents gave permission and those who didn't. We still had kids who completed the program whose parents never initially gave us that information. We can track the data in-house on our own, but when they look at Madison Plains data and compare it against the national group, those students won't be included. Go ahead.
This next slide shows you how many homes actually took the actual books that were delivered. Each student received three books before they left for the summer. So there were only seven homes that did not, that received just the seven books only. So there were 44 homes who actually got, who put the data into the system and actually got at least one book mailed home over the summer. If you go up the line there, you can see that there were 27 homes that took advantage of all nine books throughout the summer. We kind of grouped it, and in the next slide you'll see we had 8, 7, 6, and 5. That was kind of a smaller group there. You can see two homes took advantage of the eight books, seven books were four books mailed home, five books mailed home, and then six books mailed home. So you can see we started out with three books, all students started out with three, and then books were mailed throughout the course of the summer.
And I just want to add on those three, we looked in at who those three kids were, because Brad and I have looked at all of the individual students and looked at how that data is. Of those students in that three, one of them moved out of state. He's no longer in our area, so no way to continue with that as far as us to track what happened data-wise. Another one of those students, when we looked at that individual student, is actually one of our homeless students. So having a place to mail that book to, it's an impossible feat for that family. But the good part we know is that we sent that kid home with at least three books in the summer.
This kind of shows where the students were at. We have a state diagnostic test that we administer to our second and third graders, and this is based off of their third grade scores, whether they were on track, further assessment needed, or if they were not on track. And you can look at the number of students that took the nine books. 21 of those students, according to the state diagnostic, are on track. Two of them need further assessment. Two are not on track. If you go down through there, you can see 5 to 8 books, 6, 4, and 4, and then the four books, we had 31 students who were on track, 10 further assessment, 3 not on track. But the thing is, as Kim and I were talking about this evening, if you look down at the on track, that gives us about 65% of our students who are on track took those books. So it's kind of interesting to see the results that we did come up with and how much the kids are reading over the summer and took advantage of the program.
And those diagnostic assessments are what we give, and that's what helps determine if a student goes on a REMP or not. When we talk about those reading improvement and monitoring plans, so any student who's in further assessment needed or not on track, those are the students that we have to write a REMP By state law, we only, as state law, we only have to write it for students who are not on track. Madison Plains rules, we include all of our students who are further assessment needed. So we upped our own ante on that, making sure we're providing those more intense interventions to our students throughout the school year. And as Brad said, with that 65% and that 70%, 70% of the parents were aware that this program was happening. That's what I look at, that 70%. That's actually a pretty good number when you look at how quick of a timeline we had to roll through to get this out.
This was, I added this, this is something we had the kids in the third grade rate the program, what they thought of it, and I have those here if you'd like to see them. But these are some of their reactions that they wrote down on the sheet about the program itself. Number 10 was kind of, it was a good one. They loved it. Please, 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 please do it again. So it was kind of interesting to read some of their comments and what they thought of the program. The majority of them would love to do it again and would recommend it to the second graders for next year as well.
One of the things we got were some diagnostic and some analytics from the company. They've already sent us those. I didn't include some of the information up there simply because it has teacher names on it, and I didn't want to throw those data pieces up there. But this is what parent reactions, they actually provided us. This is called a Wordle, if you've never seen a Wordle. It's where they take everything that a parent puts, and then the bigger the words, the more time it was used. So they take the entire parent comments. It's actually, you can go out and do Wordles if you'd like out on the internet, they're kind of fun. So when you look at some of the key things that the parents were talking about, it was a great program. They enjoyed receiving the books in the mail. It was summer. It was love. They were new books. It was a great way, you know, and we're still looking at thinking and reading skills, that reporting, all of that type of thing. Even when you get into the small things, you know, we have the fun, the selection, those kind of things that's parent response. We don't know who the parents are that wrote. We don't know what the exact response is, but when they took the parent response, put them in, that generates all of the good things that the parents who participated were able to provide that feedback as well. The other thing, you can go into the next slide, and Brad will talk about this a little bit, but when I talked about that analytics we got back, we were able to look at the teacher, the homeroom teacher who had the most participation compared to the least, which then allows us to look at how we hand these books out to the kids the next year. Because the teacher who really guided the process, like was very hands-on through the whole process, all the teachers did a fantastic job. That was the class who built the most capacity with their students to get excited going into it.
And the one thing this year that we would definitely plan on doing that we did not have the time to do last year is hold a parent night, discuss the whole program with the parents, make sure they're aware and understand what the whole program's about. And that night could consist of discussing it, having the books available for the parents and the kids to see, and any questions that they may have can be answered on the program. Mrs. LaGault just talked about the standardized the process for students to pick books. Like she said, the teacher that we had last year pretty much understood and wanted the kids to pick the book on their level. So that could be pushed a little more this year with our second grade teachers. When they go in, they look at the books, they see the books, they can send a child to certain tables that are more at their level. And of course, reminder calls during the summer to the parents to make sure, you know, we're placing those calls to get those books in the mail and make sure they're reporting their data.
We had what they considered complete. We used a 9 book and down. Completed means that the parent called every single time and said, my kid completed this, and we did every activity with it. And we had 12 students who completed that whole process, and then they got, you see, what did they get as their prize?
They have just little prizes in the prize bag that they're going to be receiving, water bottles, bands, little trinkets for the kids to actually enjoy. It's something they'll look at.
And then just today, which is not in there, I got an email from the company thanking us for being a part, and they're donating another 100 books to the school for us to disperse however we see fit. So Brad and I were kind of processing, well, what are some ways we could use this to encourage kids to continue reading? Are we going to put some of them in our library? Sometimes putting paperback books in the library is a little bit more difficult just because of how they get handled. But they weren't all paperback books that got sent to us last year.
sometimes when the superintendent goes to the superintendent's meetings and comes back, there's a little bit of dread. But I think when these guys heard about this program, they were pretty excited about it, as you can tell. And even the teachers got on board quickly. It was a lot of work. I think it's going to make a big difference for us. I hope the grant monies are available again this year. It would be nice to expand it, because it is a great program. But just a short commercial for the Madison-Champaign ESC, which is our county board. Dan Koffenbarger, superintendent over there, does a great job bringing information to the county superintendents. Then it's up to us to take what we want from that. But this was one of his things he found and brought to us. So it was a great find for Madison Plains. No questions on that. We'll jump to our next presentation. And we have Mrs. Valerie Emmerich. And Mrs. Emmerich is here tonight to present a flag, an Ohio flag, on behalf of her father. I can talk or I can let you talk. Which would you prefer?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I've got a little something to say.
Then you go right ahead. You come on up. I didn't know if you wanted. But she's going to make a presentation to the board.
Well, actually, both my mother and my father worked for Madison Plains. My mom was a cook and retired from the school. And my dad was a bus driver. And he retired from the school, too. I have a picture of him, in case you don't. And my mom passed away in 2012. And my dad just passed away this past February. And he had, when he worked for Madison Plains, he lived on Seltzer Moon Road, about a mile off of 38, had a great big huge flagpole with the American flag and the state of Ohio flag. And when he passed away and we were going through his things, he had this Ohio flag, and my Ohio flag had seen better days, so I took it. But then when I compared it to my state, to my U.S. flag, it was too large. So I do have, and I looked up this morning, how to fold an Ohio flag. So I'm not really sure I got it right, but it's supposed to fan out like something like this. And it has 17 folds in it, which is for the 13 original colonies, and then Ohio was the fourth state after the original 13, making that state number 13. So there's 17 folds in this flag. But I would like to present this to the board for them to fly it over one of their school flagpoles under the U.S. flag in honor of my dad. He was a World War II veteran. When he passed away, we had a 90th birthday party for him the year before on his birthday. When he passed away, came rather suddenly because they discovered cancer in the brain from melanoma he had gotten years and years and years ago when he was a truck driver. But I would like to present this flag to the Board of Education in honor of my dad. My two sisters, who live close, were unable to come with me. And I have a brother that works for the Library of Congress, graduated from Madison Plains, and he said he didn't think he'd be able to make it for this presentation. But he's an archivist with the Library of Congress.
Session items that I had.
Thank you again, Mrs. Emmerich. We appreciate that, and we'll be honored to fly that flag. Thank you very much. We will move on to approval of board minutes.
Kelly's going to say some stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I should ask.
So I had a couple questions that were presented to me about.
Session. Sorry.
Yes. Sorry. About the purpose of our special meeting that we had last week.
And sure.
So kind of a question about that and about the agenda. I just would recommend that moving forward, just something as simple as to discuss superintendent evaluation, or you know, whatever might be on the agenda for that night, just so there's no question of what were we doing,
sure.
You know, that night. So I think we were legal in what we were doing, at least
yes.
My take on it is, but I think we can be more transparent and there's nothing hurt, you know, just putting it out there what we were doing.
Sure, absolutely.
So
you mean on the agenda?
On the agenda itself,
yeah.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. Just
unless it's required to be
correct.
Confidential.
Right, that's why I said, if we're talking about firing Joe Smith employee, I don't recommend saying...
I don't know Joe Smith.
Right, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I do think we
yes.
could have been fine saying evaluation of the superintendent, or, you know, conducting evaluation. That's my two cents.
Or just evaluations, depending.
Sure.
Right, so whatever's not confidential, agenda.
Right,
items.
Just
okay.
A little more, because if you looked on there, there's nothing on there. And I had some questions raised, what were you guys doing? I don't want there to be any suspicion of what we were doing.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely.
So,
good. On special meetings.
Right, and kind of along the same lines with the agenda, as far as getting up there as soon as we possibly can. I know that at least that agenda didn't get up there possibly until past the meeting, or whenever the meeting.
The day of.
Right. So when we have a special meeting, I believe at that point we know what it's going to be for usually, you know, so we can get, if we have a reason that we're comfortable putting out there, that agenda can be ready
yep.
as soon as we decide we're going to have that special meeting. So
we can publish that as soon as, right, we all agree on the date, special meeting, and when
right.
the agenda's ready. Okay. So as it more in advance, just, yeah.
Right.
I think
yeah.
so too.
And with okay. our, and just so the public knows how we do our regular meeting agendas, you guys meet on Thursday. Typically Friday comes to board members, Saturday it's available online. I don't know if this one got there as quick as we'd like, but
we try to have them available on Friday, if
right.
possible, as early as we can get them
right.
online, for sure.
Right.
Friday it's released to you guys, and it's automatically set for Saturday release
Saturday
to the public. Board docs just changed. If you didn't notice, it changed how it operates. And so
yeah.
on Friday when the switch was flipped for it to be made public, that didn't happen. So I just found out this evening that it didn't happen, because I have access to it the whole time. So for me to know if it's not accessible to the public, that's an issue. So I have to have some way of checking on that to make sure it is actually turned on. So
because we log in differently, so it's not
right.
we authenticate to the site. So it's not that we go into the public site. So we wouldn't check that. Right? I wouldn't go in and see if it's published to the public. So good.
Right.
No,
I'll,
good note.
I'll put a control in place to make sure.
Thank you.
That
appreciate that.
That's being checked.
And lastly, we talked about having board meetings potentially other places. You know, I just want to publicly say I think that's a good idea, try to generate support. You know, I think it's been successful with the impact meetings, which put the plug in, we have one Wednesday in Range Township.
Not tonight.
Right.
Tomorrow night.
Not tonight, tomorrow night.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think the more we can do that, and the more we can advertise that, the more. The numbers haven't been great, but I think just being out there and having a presence, and we could advertise it more, I think that's a positive.
Okay.
So I did, so on that, since we're talking about that, I did talk to, and I know Tim and I discussed it, that we're going to have a social media kind of blast. What do I want to say? Kind of a quick up to speed on Facebook and Twitter to get more of that out there, because I think a lot of times our message doesn't get out there, right? Our special meetings or events, and I really think that the more that we can communicate or whatever means, so mailings, I know we've done mailings, any kind of one calls that we can do, any kind of social media outlets that we can do, certainly the papers, we do send articles in for publication to both Madison Press and the Madison Messenger. Those meetings are always well attended for the Madison Messenger here tonight, right? So we send the message out as often as we can. So we just are looking for other ways also to get our message out there. So anybody has any ideas, suggestions, says, hey, try this, well, hey, we're all about it. So we've got folks that are dedicated to that, and I think that we should have that probably nailed down in the next 30 days, I would.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
if not already, because I think it's important.
It goes towards what we're trying to do as
yep.
a board, be transparent with people. Sometimes I feel like we're trying to be transparent, but there's things we can do to make it better, you know, and present that more united front or whatever.
Sure.
I think even like if we had yard signs that said meeting tonight at wherever, you know, and just picked them up. Don't put a date on them, but or say this week or whatever. And just try to advertise it more, because it's sad when there's 12 people or less.
I like flashing signs in Mount Sterling that says meeting wherever, right? So,
because we've got good things we want to talk about.
We've got
we just need
things.
People here
yeah.
to listen to.
I think one of the good news stories, though, is the Impact Live. We may only have 12 people there, but we're getting over 500 hits.
Right.
That's a big positive.
Yeah.
And I think in a district our size, I think that's the way we're going to reach people is those live feeds.
And we can't all be there at the live meeting, so everyone knows, just for anyone in the rooms. Only two board members can be at that meeting at one time. So, you know, I know myself, I haven't been at those, but I watch those live. And certainly, I love the feedback that we get, and I think that that's a great way for us to reach it. We've got to put our message out there, and it's going to be stronger, and it, in my opinion, needs to be more faster. Right? We needed to get out there more often and frequent to the voters and to the parents, and I think that's only going to help, but you're right.
I know we discussed getting more word out there, that recent grade card, especially like K-3 reading. Obviously, we had the highest in the county. You know, higher than Westfall, higher than Mike Trace. Getting that word out there, being aggressive with that kind of stuff. So.
The newsletter is going out today. It was supposed to go last Friday, but Brenner's been dealing with that company that was providing the list to us, and he just finally took it upon himself to go ahead and go straight to the Board of Elections, get their list. He added 300 new names to the list that we were using.
Great.
So
good.
That was to go out today.
So we were missing some, I bet.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, because
yeah.
a number of people told me they did not receive one, so I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And emails, right? So we've got emails to the parents, you've got notes that go home with kids, so we just really have got to get the message. We just have to get it out there, get more frequent, and celebrate the good things, like the summer reading program. Fabulous, great, let's get that out. Thank you. Okay. Anything else? I'm sorry, I did not mean to skip through.
Nope.
It's
no,
not
thanks.
Ignoring me. And maybe Mike Dodge is not here this evening because he is the volunteer coach for the high school varsity volleyball, and they have a tournament game this evening at Fairbanks. So I wish them luck, right? So hopefully we get some scores. Okay, now we'll go to approval of board minutes.
Madam President, I move that upon the recommendation of the superintendent that the minutes of the September 19th, 2017 meeting be approved as written.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. We'll move to Mr. Mustang's Treasurer's Report.
Thank you, Mrs. Cooley. For my treasurer's financial report here on the Treasurer's Report, I've got a couple things I'd like to point out. Starting with the spending plan, I'm going to go and just make a note here. It's not going to be reconciled to the five-year forecast and the budgeted amounts like I had mentioned last meeting, because you guys haven't approved the five-year forecast yet. So it'd be presumptuous of me to put in the five-year forecast amounts that haven't been approved yet. So I just want to let you know that that's why that black column for the five-year forecast still notes the May 17 forecast and not the forecast that's on the agenda. So at the next meeting, I'll be able to have that reconciled and go into a little more detail of how those amounts agree and where we're at on the spending plan. One thing to point out that's a positive, we've kind of been in draft status on the spending plan the last couple months until we can get the forecast finalized. But if you remember here, this highlighted area that says $252,000 right now, that's where we thought we stood a chance of going into the red, dropping below the line there in December. And it looks to be, based on how we've been tracking throughout the year and our actual data coming in, our actual dollars coming in and out, that we're going to be above the line. We're going to be to the good, $200,000. So we should sweep by, which is a good thing. To highlight that here, I'll just slide down to the cash flow analysis. And again, it highlights our bat wing. But that bat wing in December, January looked like we were going to hit below that red line earlier, initially in our spending plan. Doesn't look to be the case now, which is really good. The black line, again, is our estimated projected spending plan. The blue line right above that partial line is our actual data. So we're coming in above our estimates where we expected to be, which is good because, you know, we always try to project in a conservative way. So when those actual numbers start coming in and it's above the line and not below, that's a real good feeling. So that's the only thing I have for the spending plan and the financial reports. I do have one other report I want to show you too, but I want to stop here in case you guys have any questions on the spending plan and where we stand with it right now. Also, any questions you guys might have as you receive the financial reports, whether it be an expenditure or a receipt or a fund balance or anything you see in that data, it's easier for me if I know about it ahead of time if you have any questions about that. So feel free to shoot me an email about a specific request if you have any questions on one particular item, because a lot of times the detail is not easily seen in some of those reports, but I can easily find it. It's just hard to do at a meeting, and that way maybe I can answer some of your questions ahead of time.
Sure.
So just offer that out there for you guys. There's no other questions there. I do have a comparison. What this is our state funding, and we just got our October number one payment, so our first payment in October for our foundation funding, our state foundation funding. And so we get to see how we, how the new formula, the new House bill will affect us. So this is the initial analysis, and as you know, we're flat funded at the same level we were last year. So a quick history, we used to be on the guarantee for multiple years, and then under the 15-16-16-17 two-year biennial budget, we were a formula-funded district, which what that really means is we're operating as the formula says we should. So the formula variables, that the state doesn't have to put us on a guarantee, and we're not capped. So whatever the formula says we should get, that's what we collected. So if we show an increase in the number of students we're funded for, that those are additional dollars for us. So that changed with House Bill 49, and I'll get into a little bit of this with the five-year forecast. But this is going to kind of lead into that five-year forecast discussion a little bit. What I wanted to point out here is why we're flat funded, and this demonstrates that pretty well. And if you don't mind, I might come up to the screen. You're okay with that? The biggest reason we're flat funded is our state share index going down. Our state share index has gone down from a high of 58% in 1999 to our low this year, which is 21%. That's our state share index. What drives that down for us, Madison Plains, the single largest factor is our property value. Our property value has grown 10%. Our three-year average has grown 10% over what it was in the 17 funding formula to our first payment here in October. So what this is our final payment under FY17. This is our October payment under FY18. Our three-year average property valuation in the district grew from $310 million to $342 million. That's a 10% increase. Over the same period, the state property valuation average for the entire state only grew 2%. So that's how much higher a rate that Madison Plains' property values are growing as compared to the state as a whole. And the largest part of that is due to the CAUV valuation. That impacted us in tax year 15. So in this year, when we had a valuation of $310 million, we only had one high valuation year in there. That was that year that the CAUV jumped. People saw double-digit property taxes increases. But there was only one of those years in the three-year average. So that held it to $310 million. That kept us on the formula of being a formula-funded district. Under the new budget, now you bring in 15 and 16. Well, that's another high year because it's the same valuation as what it was in 15, essentially. So now you have two high years and one low year. That drove our property value up. So as you know, the state has a plan to adjust the CAUV value formula, but it's going to be phased in over 2 years, and it doesn't help us in this budget. So what that amounts to is a decrease, even though our formula ABM, which on here shows the same, but we have revised figures that show our number of students has grown around 25 students which normally under the formula would mean another $150,000. You can't see that here, because we're so far on the guarantee. We have, let me find it here, $621,000 less just in the opportunity grant. That's the dollars for each student. So $6,010 per student. Last year it was $6,000 per student. They increased it $10 per student. It's a 0.02%, something like that. But due to this state share index driving down because of the high property values, that went from 2.2 million to 1.5 million. So $621,000. Yeah, if you would, thank you. Go ahead and go all the way down. Just bring that back up here. Okay, yeah. So, and then here we have our target assistance, which is the one bright spot, but still doesn't help us. What this is because we're such a high agricultural value district, we get targeted assistance because we have so much, such a large percentage of agricultural value. So that actually went up $115,000, but it still doesn't help us to achieve an amount greater than the guaranteed amount we're receiving. We lost $155,000 in transportation funding. They reduced it that much, and that was on the old single-tier transportation proposal, what we currently operate under. So if this had been two-tier, you know, that's another $500,000 roughly. So then that's $600,000 if, you know, if we would have enacted two-tier and dropped that down. So you lost $155,000 there, $621,000 there, a couple other little things here and there that got adjusted. Ultimately, it amounts to the formula says we should receive $746,000 less than what we received last year. So the state says, we're not gonna let that happen. We're gonna make sure you at least get what you received last year. So they give us $746,000 in capacity aid, $746,000 in capacity aid. So all that amounts to is
keep us flat.
Okay, but I just want to kind of show you how that comes to be. And the biggest factor for us is really just it's all tied up in those land values. But there's nothing we can really do about that. The formula is going to reflect it. We can't change the property values. The CAUV adjustments are going to take 2 years to get phased in. So we won't even see it until potentially 3 years from now when the next budget rolls through. And who knows what that budget will look like. So right now we have to operate under the circumstances we have, which is flat state funding.
How long is that guarantee still going to be in place?
2 years. That's just under the current biannual
budget.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So next year, if we were to take this out to 2019's state funding, it drives us down onto the guarantee over $1 million. So it's even worse. We're getting deeper and deeper onto the guarantee. And what that means is in order to overcome that, we'd have to find a solution within the formula, like two-tier busing, that would generate more than $750,000 to get any additional funding.
The number of new students we get won't overcome.
No, like I said, we got 25 new students, that's $150,000. That's great, but you won't see it. We won't realize that because the state's given us $746,000 that they say the formula says we shouldn't really even be receiving.
The challenge is if we keep growing in certain grades, we need to add teachers, we'll get no additional funding for teachers.
Right.
Todd, can you give the layman's definition of state share?
There are things that come into play, the property values, the average income in the district, the median income. Even though it's not super high, we're above average as compared to the statewide average. We're roughly $34,000, and the state average is around $32,000. You know, so we're right around average, right above it. But those things tell the state how to divide up the pie, essentially, based on all the districts in the state, how they're going to divide the pie up based on who has what. So they look at Madison Plains as being wealthy, essentially, because we have a large capacity to generate our own local wealth. We have a lot of high land value. If we had a levy on, it would generate a good amount of money. So we should be able to help ourselves, I guess is the way they look at it. Whereas a district, say, 25 miles down the road, Washington Courthouse, they have a very small, high poverty, urban, suburban district, and they're 74, 78% free and reduced. they get a huge amount of state aid because the state says you don't have the ability to generate those funds locally. So we're going to provide you with that. They're putting away $1 million extra a year. So they're doing well now. The state's giving them even more. So they're going to continue to do better and better and better. So it's not necessarily a need-based. It's what the analytics tell you. It's what the formula tells you who should get what. Because you can drive around our district and see plenty of communities that you say, doesn't look like we're very wealthy. Looks like we could use some additional state aid. You could drive to Washington Courthouse and say, these schools are beautiful. It looks like a college campus. Why do they get more state aid per student than we would? So it's really hard to look at it from the outside in. You really have to have somebody explain it to you like this to even kind of grasp it. My complaint's always been, though, the state says, we'll give you additional aid if you need it because you're poor, you know, quotes. But if you're wealthy, you have to go ask for it. Well, there's a big difference between saying that we'll give it to you guaranteed and you have to go ask for it, which means voters have to approve it. So if they don't, well, then you're really in a pickle. So
that state share coming down is the state telling us you need to go get it yourself.
Yeah, essentially. And I've got another picture here that shows you how far that's happened, what's happened there with our state share index. So this goes all the way back to 1999. Our state share was up to 58%. Now we're down to 21%. This is the trend line.
I know we've discussed it before, but you know, if you're a farmer whose your taxes have jumped up, or a large property owner, you know, hearing how wealthy you are, if you're not selling your ground at this moment, you're just basically paying super high taxes and trying to survive.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a hard sell.
It is a hard sell, and it's the only sell we have.
Right.
You know, from our standpoint as a district, we're dealt the cards just like farmers are dealt.
Right.
We have to manage our bottom line. We have to deal with the resources that are available to us. We try to generate additional resources where we can within the formula or through a levy, but there's only so many things we can do before you have to start cutting programs, you know, and really reducing your costs. So, but this hopefully gives you an idea as to the why we're flat funded and the situation we're in, how the state perceives us. So, you guys have any questions on the state funding? I took a little more than my 5 minutes on my treasury report there. I need to leave more time for the 5-year forecast, which is the real fun, right? This is the good
stuff.
All right. Okay. Change until close to when we had to file the October forecast. So that's why when we saw we were going to receive those additional funds, we were already into FY18. That's why we're filing, and you're going to see this now, how that affected the forecast. All right, line by line, we'll try and go through it as quick as I can here without putting everybody to sleep. I'll try to note the changes. I'll try to gloss over the things that haven't changed. Hopefully that helps. The first line is our general property tax. The only thing that was added there underneath the starred area, which is right here, the addition that we have a renewal up for our PI levy. So it notes that the PI levy is not included in the summary above, which still shows us at 20.06 just off the floor. That's the change there. Speaking to our tax base, historically our tax base has grown each year. However, values decreased for the first time in 2009. This is just a brief history of each line. In 2016, in calendar year 2015, residential ag values jumped dramatically, 41.7%. That was the state CAUV values that jumped up. Our commercial agricultural values have declined and continue to do so. But they increased slightly by 1% in 2017, but still, commercial and industrial is not a significant area for our real estate tax collections. We just really don't have a whole lot of industry like that in the district. In the projections for residential ag, we project residential ag values to grow by less than a quarter of a percent for the years between updates and revaluations. This is supported by a less than 1% increase in 2017. That's the actual increase that we saw. With the update in 2017, we expect modest gains in residential values, but offsetting declining values in ag values due to a CAUV formula adjustment are expected to result in an estimated 0.25% overall increase. So that's essentially flat, is what we're saying. We're essentially looking at our tax collections going to be essentially flat. And the fact is, I don't have a real firm grasp on what it's going to look like in December when we get it in, because what's been proposed is a 28% reduction in CAUV values, so the agricultural values, but they have said that they're going to phase that in over 2 years. So how that's going to offset the increase in the residential, which is looking at around a 20-24% increase in residential, is yet to be determined, kind of. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Also, the increases in value are kind of segmented throughout the county. There are areas within the county that saw large increases in property value and other areas that really didn't. So Choctaw Lake saw big increases in residential property values, but other areas in the district, small villages, maybe might not have. So conservatively, we'll look at that as being flat. I think that's probably what it'll actually be. We'll see. If anything, we might lose, $10,000-$30,000 out of this deal. I'm not sure. We'll see. All right, our last new operating levy was passed in May 2005 when the voters of Madison Plains Local School District passed an 8-mil three-year property tax. This operating levy was renewed May 6, 2014 for a continuing period of time. A 5.953-mil new emergency operating levy was placed on the ballot for the August 8, 2017 special election. However, the levy was not passed. So that's just as a disclosure. One thing to note, too, is estimated revenues include real estate and public utility personal property. Public utility personal property had previously been reported in line 1.02, but is more appropriately classified in line 1.01. So what that is without zooming in too much, we had around $300,000 that we were classifying under the tangible personal property tax line, line 1.02, which really was public utility personal property tax, which we can record up in the real estate tax line item. So we just went ahead and made that move. That's just an accounting change more than anything. It doesn't affect our tax collections or the amount we collect at all. It's just we went ahead and made that change to, it was more appropriate. That's what I was just speaking to, tangible personal property tax, line 1.02, that's what's been eliminated. And then our state foundation payments. I am going to read through this, so bear with me, because it does explain what we were speaking to earlier and hopefully summarizes it. State foundation payments realized an increase of $319,018 in 2016 and an additional increase of $190,036 in 2017. For Madison Plains, for the budgeted biennium under House Bill 64, this gain was offset in part by the phase out and complete elimination of the tangible personal property tax reimbursement in 2016. The decrease due to the tangible personal property tax reimbursement from 2015 to 2017 totaled $531,754. Increases in the state funding formula to offset the loss of tangible personal property tax reimbursements resulted in the district no longer being on the funding guarantee and being a formula funded district for 2016 and 2017. That's what I was speaking to earlier when I said we went from a guaranteed district to a formula district under the last budget. So this is where it changes. This changed to House Bill 49 and the enacting of the 2018-19 biennial budget, which places Madison Plains back on the funding guarantee and sets our funding at 2017 levels for 2018 and 2019. This flat funding is a result of our state share index decreasing significantly from 29% to 21%, due mostly to an increase in the three-year average total property valuation. The average valuation went from including one high valuation year, 2015, to two high valuation years, 2015 and 2016, which significantly increased our three-year average total valuation by approximately 10%. The high valuation years are a result of the CAUV increases discussed in 1.01 above. So that's the why on that. That's how it affects our state foundation payments when we see those local property valuations rise for those years. Moving on, despite growth in our formula average daily membership, that's the 25 students that we saw an increase. The changes in average total valuation, along with the statewide decrease in the percentage of transportation funding received, that's something I didn't mention earlier. It went from 50% in 2017 to 37.5% in 2018 and 25% in 2019. So that has driven the district back onto the guarantee, resulting in a transitional aid guarantee amount of $746,296, just to maintain the level of funding received in 2017. Due to this large guarantee amount, future years of the forecast are projected at 2017 levels and remain flat. So all we can project is what we know. All we know is the next two-year budget. Beyond that, we flatline it. We really don't know. Due to funding changes in House Bill 49, the expected additional $345,307 in transportation funding from a move to two-tier busing has been removed from the forecast for 2018 and all future years. The district was forced to remain on a single-tier schedule in order to not incur additional costs, along with not receiving additional funding. So we've discussed that at length. We couldn't absorb the additional cost of two-tier busing without receiving the additional revenue that we expected to receive. Restricted grants and aid, that's career tech funding and economically disadvantaged funding. Career tech's a separate guaranteed amount. They're gonna make sure that we get the same amount for career tech funding that we did last year. So that amount actually went down, due in large part again to the state share index, but they're gonna make sure we get the same amount we did last year. So that's the long and short of that. So those amounts for career tech and economically disadvantaged, why they might increase or decrease some, the overall state funding is gonna remain flat, so that's why these numbers have remained flat. Rollback and homestead reimbursements, that's line 1.05. Rollback and homestead reimbursements from the state of Ohio will generally grow with new construction, reappraisals, updates, and new levies. In years when replacement and renewal levies go off the tax duplicate, revenues in this category will fall. Estimates of rollback and homestead reimbursements for replacement, renewal, or new levies are included in the total revenues for the levy on the appropriate line of the forecast. The tangible personal property reimbursement from the state referenced above in 1.035 was accounted for in this line, 1.050. The tangible personal property tax reimbursement was reduced by approximately $341,599 in 2016 and has been completely eliminated in 2017 and all future years of the forecast. What that is you see that amount here going from back in 2015, we showed $1.3 million in 1.05 property tax allocation. That goes to $969,000 in 16, $789,000 in 17, and then we project $780,000 in 439. So that's that elimination of that tangible personal property tax. So even in that 15-16, 16-17 biennial budget where we were on the formula and we saw additional state funding, it was in large part offset by that reduction in the tangible personal property tax reimbursement. So essentially, we're flat even when we think we're not flat when it comes to that, which is difficult. The other revenue line item, other revenue consists of interest income, student fees, and open enrollment tuition payments from other districts. The district has an active cash management policy that promotes growth of interest income. Interest rates have been and are projected to remain low throughout the forecast. From 2013 to 14, the number of non-resident students attending Madison Plains Local School District through open enrollment decreased. However, open enrollment increased in 2015 and in 2016. The decline in open enrollment hit a low in 2014 and has grown since, but now appears to be stable. The revenue per pupil for open enrollment increased due to increases in state per pupil funding amounts in 2016 and 2017. However, an overall decrease was still realized from 16 to 17 in the amount of $16,794, resulting in a projected decrease for 2018 based on the most recent available data. Basically what that is we didn't get as many kids coming in as what we thought, so we've reduced that down from what our original estimate was, but it's not an overall, it's still relatively stable. The increase per student, as you know, the funding follows the student, so when a student comes to us, we receive that full $6,010 plus any additional amounts based on them being a special ed student or anything else. And then the funding also follows the student when they leave to the full amount. So That's a little difficult too, because it's not the 28% or 21% that the state share, it's the full amount of the student that's leaving the district when that we don't receive when a student doesn't attend here. So right now we haven't been winning that battle. We have more students going out than we do coming in, which is another challenge. Moving on to expenditures. Real quick, we're in the last year of our three-year agreement with both our unions, MPEA and OPC, our certified and classified unions. It was a 1%, 2%, 2% agreement. It was 1% for 2016, 2% for 16 and 17. We have projected a 1% increase for fiscal years 19, 20, and 21. That's maintaining the consistency that we've always presented in our forecasts without any additional direction from the board to do otherwise. So that 1% increase is still within this forecast, along with the 1.85% increase for the average increase for steps. So overall, in those unknown years, which would be 19, 20, 21, 22, it's a 2.85% increase roughly for salaries. One thing that I do want to point out is that we did have a really good attrition year this year. Savings through attrition and turnover in positions resulted in a net savings of $189,085 from 2017 to 2018. That's a significant amount. What that is are high teachers at a high degree and a high number of years service. So you have a Mr. Jackson or Mr. Harold that have been here over 30 years, topped out with an MA plus 30, or you know, a high degree, getting paid a large amount of money, retiring or leaving service, and then being replaced with, say, a new teacher fresh out of college. Those swings can be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 sometimes. So we had a really good turnover there as far from a financial standpoint. From a financial standpoint, yeah, we lost some good people, that's for sure. But financially, it definitely helped our bottom line. Moving on to retirement fringe benefits, that's where the health insurance, retirement, Medicare, those type of things are included. You've heard it before, our agreement calls for no greater than a 10% increase in health insurance. If it goes above that, the unions are responsible for that additional amount. So our maximum exposure for our health insurance is 8%. So that's what we forecast in the years we don't know, because that's our maximum liability. This last year we had a 5% increase. So that's what's included in there for health insurance. Also, with our health plan, we've been able to manage that through a gap insurance. And a gap insurance used to be a gap coverage and went to an HRA. The savings, we went from spending roughly $300,000 a year to $275,000 a year just by switching to a gap to an HRA. And then while being able to manage that HRA by seeing the actual dollars going in and dollars going out, we're able to fund it and update the amount that it's funded at. We're looking at we have a 25% decrease going into 2018. So that number should be around $165,000. So a big savings there just by being able to manage our HRA amount, our gap coverage. What that is the amount that pays for the high deductible plan. We have a high deductible for our employees. The HRA pays for the first, right now it's 80%. So it pays for the first 80% of that $10,000 deductible or $5,000 deductible for single. And then if the employee goes beyond that, they are responsible for the last 20%. So it's really been a good thing for the district, that structure of that health insurance plan. Also, another accounting change, the HRA and FSA portion of the health plan that used to be accounted for as operating transfers out is now accounted for in line 3.02 as it more accurately assigns the cost to multiple accounts as opposed to a one-time transfer from the general fund to the 024 fund. Line 5.01, operating transfers out, has been reduced by the same corresponding amount to account for this change. What that is that was a recommendation from our last audit that we more appropriately reflect that cost over the multiple general fund accounts or food service accounts or wherever that employee is being paid from. Instead of doing what we did was pay the HRA bill from the 024 account and then transfer an amount from the 01 account into the 024 account. So you showed no detail across the funds. And it also required an additional step. Now we're able to do it in such a way that, and it helps us monitor the amount going in and out. It's more accurate also. So there's less projection involved in how much to fund the plan. If an employee's on a family plan for health insurance, we know the corresponding amount to fund the plan after the HRA. Whereas before, we kind of had to set it at a certain amount and then adjust it based on the performance of the plan. Now we're able to more accurately set that amount. But again, that's just an accounting change. That's not any change in dollars. It's not additional funds being spent or anything like that. I know I should have said this sooner, but if you guys have any questions, just stop or else I'm going to keep on motoring. All right. The last part to the attrition piece and the turnover, there's also an amount recognized as savings in the fringe benefits because, again, you have the retirement percentage that the board pays for all the employees as well as the Medicare board side, the 1.45% for the Medicare. So when you see a reduction in salaries, you also see the reduction in that amount. So that resulted in $29,214 projected from 17 to 18. So there's a little bit of savings there. Purchase services, anticipated expenditures in this category based on historical spending patterns. The largest expenditures in this category are for the district psychologist, speech therapist, utility bills, which would be gas, electric, telephone, and auditor and treasurer fees. Also, the number of residents and students open enrolled in other districts has continued to increase, resulting in an increase in open enrollment payments to other districts in 2015, 2016, and 2017. That's that losing battle we're kind of fighting with the in and out of open enrollment students. We've done a great job of leveling those amounts off, but we still see it not in our favor when it comes to the in and out. A 0.02% increase is projected for 2019 based on per student funding increasing from $6,010 per student to $6,020 per student in 2020. And future years of the forecast are projected at 2019 levels and remain flat for open enrollment payments. That's our projection that these have, in fact, leveled off. You know, they're not going to grow one way or the other. We have projected a 4% increase in all purchase service expenditures for FY18 and a 1% increase for FY19, 20, and 21. With the exception of electricity payments, we expect electricity payments to decrease in FY18 due to a decrease in the kilowatt hour contract pricing for this period of 6%. New expenses in 2017 include college credit plus tuition and bus driver services due to lack of coverage. The kilowatt hour pricing, we're in a long-term agreement with Ohio Schools Council as part of that, and among others. And what it does is it sets our pricing and it gets reevaluated every 3 years. So our total contract, which was a multiple-year contract, expired, and the new contract pricing that they were able to negotiate was a lot less. So that's where we were able to project that 6% decrease in the electricity costs. The college credit plus tuition, you know, as you're aware, when a student chooses to do college credit plus, the district pays for the tuition, except if the student is not on free or reduced lunch and fails the class. So if a student fails the class, the student's responsible for the payment unless they're on free or reduced lunch. But in a large part, the district pays for the tuition as well as textbooks, which textbooks aren't reflected here. They're reflected up in supplies. But that's a new expense. And then the bus coverage, that was due to our lack of drivers last year, and we anticipated that for this year too. Although we are doing a better job. You've noticed some of the hirings. We've had bus drivers coming in. So hopefully we don't have as much of a dependence just to get kids home and back with a contracted service like First Student, which is just out of necessity more than anything else. We just didn't have the people available. So we did what we had to do. Supplies and materials. The district's made a commitment to increase curriculum supplies provided to the classrooms. Supplies and materials increased in 2015. And then a corresponding decrease in 2016. What that is we had a large increase in 2015 because the district made a commitment to increase the amount they were spending on instructional supplies in the district. And then, so we didn't maintain that level. It was more of a jump. And then, so that number fell back down to a normal, you know, quote unquote, normal level or what it was before. the corresponding decrease in 2016. The district continues to be committed to providing adequate supplies and materials. However, due to a projected negative cash balance in 2019, the total amount spent on supplies and materials, while increasing an average of 7% in 2017 and 2018, has not returned to the level and amount spent in 2015. So what we spent in 2015, we haven't even come back to that in 16, 17, or projected in 18. So we've held that number fairly consistent and below what our high was in 2015. We have projected a 1% increase in these expenditures in 2019 and the remaining years of the forecast. Again, same kind of story in capital outlay. In order to maintain aging facilities in the district, capital outlay expenditures increased in 2015. The majority of these expenditures were shifted to the Permanent Improvement Fund in 2016. This, along with a projected negative cash balance in 2019, has resulted in a $129,078 decrease in capital outlay expenditures from 2016 to 2017. After this decrease, we have set the capital outlay expenditure amount to a conservative $63,450. That's approximately a 50% of our previous three-year average, and frozen it there for the remaining years of the forecast. So what that is consistent with our strategy of pushing more of the burden for those capital expenditures off onto the permanent improvement levy, which is what those funds are there for. We made a real push for that in 16 is when we really started with that. But we've also been conservative, noting the deficit, the fiscal cliff. So that's why we set that amount at a lesser amount. Debt service, we have no debt in the district. We had a House Bill 264 project, but that was paid for in full in 2017, so there has been removed from the forecast.
Is that common for school districts to not have debt? Or?
Not necessarily, no. No, we've had this discussion kind of before, that debt can be a great tool for a district to leverage future funding to meet immediate needs. And spend essentially the same amount per year that they were spending trying to do it one or two at a time for things like buses or classroom furniture or things like that. So it's not ordinary. Also, a lot of districts have bonds, you know, for new facilities. We don't have that. Another thing that affected our cash position was when we made the large expenditure for the modulars and did it without debt. So that drove down our cash balance.
If a school doesn't have a PI, they're going to have debt because they're going to go buy buses and computers with debt. So if we didn't have PI, you'd be looking at debt.
I think the only time since I've been on the board that it even came up was to purchase buses,
yeah.
And the board rejected that.
To lease them, right?
Yeah, we didn't talk about it much.
Yeah.
No. The board was pretty firm that we don't like a lot of debt in this district. And that's a good thing. I mean, it's a great feeling not to have debt, but it's also a financial tool. Finally, we're at the end. The ADM forecast, we have shown growth from 2017 to 2018, approximately 1.9%, 25 at ADM. That's average daily membership. Our enrollment projections have been aligned with projections from the High School Facilities Commission, as well as the judgment, the administration, and the Board of Education. Enrollment is believed to stay steady through the forecast. So we've come a good way. We were down to a low of in the 1100s, low 1200s, you know, so now to be looking at around 1320, 1300, right around there is a good thing. So we've made strides towards keeping kids in the district, bringing kids into the district, growth within our district with what the district's able to do.
Where those 25 came from, what grades? Are we low in certain grades?
Oh, yes, we can do that.
Our elementaries got hammered pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Brad can speak to that.
Yeah.
As far as lower enrollment.
We have a smaller graduating class this year, though. Is that correct?
Right. And so kindergarten is small, but other grades in elementary are full.
Right. So that can be deceiving, too. You may have, you know, parents that spend all their time in one building that think that we've got plenty of room, where if you go down to the other building, they may be at capacity. What that all results in is what everybody's concerned with is the bottom line. That brings us to an estimate of $1.694 million. So $1,694,188 and FY18, that's this year's ending balance. That's what we're projecting. That's after our budget reserve and projected encumbrances. Our cash balance at the end of this year looks to be $2,344,188. But in 2019, where we did show on the previous forecast a positive balance of $16,000 due to the two-tier solution, now it's sitting in the red to the tune of $118,928. That's something I think that we could, you know, our cash balance at the end of that year is $531,072. So we would have a cash balance, but that's looking at that budget reserve. We have to make a decision on do we want to maintain that, which we've never touched it to this point. And then you see the steep fall off after that, 2.3 million, 4.9 million, 7.9 million. And a lot of that, again, is budgeting at 2.85% for salaries, 8% for health insurance, our maximum exposures, and not knowing what the state's going to do. That's keeping our funding essentially flat through the life of the forecast for state funding, and really for much of the local funding. So that's why you see that number grow at such a rate like that. That's the forecast. It's not the best forecast I've ever been able to present, but we've been kind of forecasting it for a while now. So the one thing I would point out is that on our last year's October forecast that we did, the first one we did this time last year, we showed that we were going to be in the red $600,000. And then we had the two-tier solution, showed we were going to be positive $16,000 in 19. And now we're showing we're going to be in the red $118,000. So we've made strides on our own. With our own management practices, but it's not enough. It hasn't been enough to date. So we've got more work to do. So with that, are there any questions on the board?
Very thorough, very detailed.
If significant changes happen, Todd.
Right, significant changes were, we were required to file a forecast in October, and we were required to do an update in May. If significant changes happen, like happened in for our January, we are able to file a revised forecast. It's presented to the board the same way this is, and it's approved by the board. I'm actually required to present to you a revised forecast if significant changes occur. So that's what I would do, and then you would approve it in the same manner and we would file it. That's what we did in January with the two-tier solution. So. Any other questions? Yes, that is all I have. You will see that there's an executive session noted under my report. So when we get to that.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We then move to section F. This is not working. Okay, I'll talk loud. We'll move to financial action items.
I move that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the September 2017 financial statements be accepted as presented.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Bonds?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
I move that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the five-year forecast be approved as presented.
Second.
Discussion. I will say thank you again for the detail. I know that it's not, I mean, it's a lot for us, it's a lot for me, but thank you very much. It helps a lot. Call roll, please.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Carries 4-0.
I make a motion that we enter into the executive session at 8:15 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G, Section 5, matters to be required to be kept confidential, a federal law or rules or state statutes.
I'll second.
Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0. Executive session.
Executive session, we're taking no action. We will be taking action in executive session.
No. After.
After the executive session. That's working. Definitely not. Okay. We will move to Section G, Superintendent's Report.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Did we want to note who we were talking to, just for the record? Did we say that prior to going in?
We did not.
You want us to kind of briefly highlight that?
Sure. Thank you. If that's okay.
Yeah. We can't talk about the contents of what they were talking about,
sure.
But that
Go
was
ahead.
The Auditor of State's Office, the Performance Audit Division. They're doing a performance audit on Madison Plains, looking at our operations to see how we can gain efficiencies. And we're happy to have them here partnering with us to, again, help us with our never-ending effort to become more efficient in our operations.
Sorry. That's part of the audit process to have those meetings in executive session. So that's per their request.
Everything has to be confidential.
Correct.
Till the final audit, which will be?
Final audit will be published to the public. And then they'll timeline that a little bit later for us.
Yeah. All right. My report. PI levy update. We've sent out a postcard to our registered voters. There's a newsletter that was to go out today that speaks to the PI levy, speaks to the general fund, where it stands as of today, speaks to our report card. That's going to go to all registered voters. We've updated that list in conjunction with Tim Wilson, Wilson Printing. He does a good job for us, and he's found actually 300 more registered voters than on the original list, which is a good thing. So that'll be going out. We've got more information going out this Friday. We've got an impact meeting tomorrow night, which the PI levy is the focus, talking about the cost. Sometimes there's some confusion over gross rate versus effective rate. We'll make sure that's clear for folks tomorrow night. That'll be in Midway, the fire department. We also have another postcard going out at the end of next week. We have one calls going out. And we also have one of the things that we had on our communication plan was to look at the voter analytics. And Todd has pulled that information down from Board of Elections, been able to sort and query that. And we now have our list. The key list we were looking for was our parents or recent graduates that did not vote. And we have that list, and it's significant. We had around, I believe it was 1,100 that were total, and we had 300 that voted. So there are about 800 that did not vote. So that's a key list of folks that we want to target and make sure that they understand how important it is for them to get out and vote. So we will be working on that in our communications.
Good.
One thing I wanted to toss up there, Todd, the effective tax rates. And I know we've had a not nearly enough discussion about taxes and their income. This is a one chart and I'm done. This is our effective millage rates going back to 98. And I just wanted to highlight, and I know values went up, and so farmers are paying more. I understand that. But if they had the effective rate of any time since 1998, their taxes would have been much higher. You can see we're at 20.95. In 2004, when we did a RIF and asked for 8 mils, we were at 22.78 mils. It was our effective rate.
That includes PI.
It does include PI. So you can see we're lower than when we asked for money the last time in 2004 and got it in 5. So I think that's a pretty clear picture that you know, you've got your declining effective rate because values are growing, and I understand that. But you reach a certain point when you've got to ask for new money. This kind of highlights that we're beyond where we were the last time that we asked for and got new money as far as the effective rate goes.
This is the local position, correct?
Correct.
As far as what drives our local funding.
Mm-hmm.
Just to piggyback on you one second, there's our state funding. So the two in conjunction, you can see, are both heading in the wrong direction. So sorry to hijack the presentation.
No, you're dead on. That's it. So that's PI. And we'll be talking about that tomorrow night.
So how are we sharing that information?
That is tomorrow night we'll be talking about that and the chart that Todd just had up there, as well as what the actual cost is for the 0.89 mils for our effective rate on a PI right now. This will be going out. This piece right here may be going out with the postcard. We're trying to put that together right now, kind of spitballing what we want to have on that postcard. Main thing is talking about the cost to the homeowner, to the farmer at this point.
The other piece that, you know, that we have is the PI portal and the treasurer's page that also has information on the operating levy. So you can see here we have the operating levy here, which will take you to some of that information that we had in the last proposal, and then the PI levy here, where you have calculators for the PI, as well as the ballot language and some different information there. So we can add to these pages with information like to add there, and anything else that we see might be beneficial.
The key is getting all that information out, because we, as we know, based on our survey, there are a lot of folks in our community that aren't going to go here.
Correct.
And we know that, so we've got to do this, and it's reaching a certain number of people, but there's a lot of people that are not going to go here to find it.
Right.
So
we've got
to get it in their hands.
This is them coming to us.
Right.
You're absolutely right. We have to find a way to get this to them.
That's our mailers.
You're absolutely right.
So. Just to give a little critique, those signs are too small, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know who designed them or whatever. But
well, the design is good. And there you go. You gotta remember.
You gotta have value. If we spend some money on that, then it's almost impossible to see or tell what we're trying to get across.
Well, the thing you gotta remember is I've had several people tell me they stand out because they're different. Not that the other signs aren't good.
Easy.
But,
yeah.
Ours are unique. It's grabbing people's attention. Like, what is that?
Right.
So,
what is
well,
that?
But we've got some others coming.
Well,
I
haven't
about heard
design,
one positive comment.
The design's universal. It's able. We can put it a lot of different things, and it's pretty recognizable as far as from a block standpoint.
Yeah.
To know that that's our PI logo, for lack of a better word. So I like it in the fact that one, I, in coordination with Tim's brainstorming, completed his vision for that design. As far as where and how we use it. I think that's kind of more what you're
yeah,
speaking to.
Yeah, no, I don't
to.
Necessarily have a bigger problem. The yard sign is just that big.
Just the yard part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have necessarily a problem with the sign itself. I like how it says different things, you know.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
one I envision to be able to use now and in the future for future campaigns. I think it's a great universal thing that won't really lose its value as far as from a design standpoint.
Yeah. Okay, new bus route. As we talked about earlier, when it comes to special ed, and when you have a situation where you have a new student that has needs, anytime we have a student moves in, needs special transportation, we have to provide it one way or another. The case we have now is, this is not a new student, we have a student that's been here for quite some time. This year we've been trying to accommodate their schedule, but we've been not able to meet their IEP in regards to providing their math instruction. What we're doing is getting it to them, but not in an ideal way, and it's not meeting their IEP. So we do have a situation, and the reason being is we're having to transport them home earlier in the day with a driver that runs a regular route in the afternoon. So they're coming in transporting the student home early, but now that's not acceptable because he's not getting his math, which was called for as part of his core and his IEP. So we have a situation where we've been working to try to figure out how can we get this student transported home and still get their math. We've looked at their schedule, we've looked at every different scenario, and we can't figure out a scenario in which we can provide transportation, provide his education on his transportation schedule he's got now. So the situation we're kind of backed into is, as long as we have this student, and hopefully it's for a long time, but we need to transport him later in the day, which requires us to add another route, which is more expense. And that's again why we struggled with bringing this to the board, because we're trying to do the opposite of that.
Sure.
But we're in a situation where I don't know how else we're going to do it. The good news is, in working with Joe, we've been talking about, okay, if we add this route, add this expense, how do we get the most bang out of adding this driver? And normally you just put them on a van and they just take that one student home, and so they're getting, you know, it's a full driver transporting one, maybe two handicapped students. What we're looking to do here is modify one of our current buses that's not being used, and back into a handicap bus and transporting other students as well. So this student happens to live down near Mount Sterling. What we want to do is split the two Sterling routes into smaller routes and put some of those kids on this bus. So this student is getting transported when they need to get transported. They're getting their math that they need to have, and we've decreased the riders on the two routes going to Sterling now, which they're overcrowded. So we're trying to get the most bang out of adding this driver. So
didn't you say there were like three to a seat though?
Yeah, we have. It's a bad situation. So, and then if we have the situation where we got a driver that's off and we can't cover and we need to combine, we can't. Those buses are too full. So you will be seeing at the next meeting from me a request for an approval of a new driver. And the good news is we have drivers in the pipeline. So the bad news is we're running out of money to pay drivers in the pipeline. So again, this is a situation we've been trying to avoid all year long. We just can't get the services to the student that we're required to provide. So you'll be seeing that come to you soon.
How are we handling the situation from now until the next meeting?
We are trying to provide them with their math instruction best we can. Right now, basically, his teacher is providing all the instruction to an aide who's getting it to the student during the time that they're here. That's not sufficient.
Okay.
And so that teacher, again, wants that student in her class, and we want him in her class. So this is the only way we can get that to work. Her schedule doesn't allow us to flex her or have her available in the morning or anything like that. So it's a difficult situation. So we tried it. It's not working. Last thing I want to talk about, an option for our hourly employees, the classified employees, to be compensated to coach or be advisors for our extracurricular activities. We had a position that we filled this past year with an hourly employee to coach basketball, and one option we had there was to offset their regular job to allow them to coach, because you can't go for 40 hours, you're going to get overtime. Another option that we recently found, Fair Labor Standard Act, allows you to compensate hourly employees up to 20% of their cost associated with coaching or advising. Okay, and that 20% is of the supplemental that's being paid. So if the supplemental is $1,000, we're allowed to pay them up to 20% of that $1,000 for coaching or advising. Okay, and that's to offset their costs associated with being that coach or advisor. Okay,
without them having to reduce hours or track.
Right. At that point, you don't fall underneath the overtime rules, so you're not offsetting anything.
It's kind of a stipend.
Yeah.
For they make their normal hourly rate based on the hours they work from that place, not extracurricular related.
That's right. Correct.
They refer to it as a nominal fee, is what it's referred to when they work as a volunteer. They have no real expectation of payment, but we're allowed to pay them up to 20% of that supplemental that's on the salary schedule as a nominal fee for their service as a volunteer.
They will still take one of the approved spots for coaches and advisors. So if basketball has four positions and they're a volunteer, but they get this 20% nominal fee, that takes one of those positions.
Would that save us money then?
It could.
Yeah, because you go from compensating a full supplemental for that position to 20%. Because one of my initial concerns was, are we going to have a flood of volunteers that say, oh, I want my 20%, you know? And it's not going to be that, because the number of positions are limited to the number of positions allocated on the supplemental salary schedule. So if you say there are only four assistants for one sport, you can only employ four assistants for that one sport at a paid rate, whether it be a full supplemental or 20%. If those positions are filled and you still want to have volunteers outside of that, people can still volunteer their time, but there will be no payment tied to it. We have people that do that now, that volunteer time with the sport with no expectation of payment. They're doing it outside of the number of positions available on the salary schedule, so we don't pay those individuals. We're not required to. So this is a win-win. It allows those individuals to receive some form of compensation. It allows the district to potentially save money on those supplementals, and it allows the employees to dedicate their entire amount of time that they're contracted to work to their main position without having to give up any docked hours or time in the buildings or time wherever they're supposed to be normally.
I've already met with the officers within the OPSI bargaining unit. They like the idea. They like that it gives an opportunity for the hourly employees to coach. Obviously, they don't like the 20%, but that's not a negotiable thing. It's not our rule. So they have to live by that. What we'll end up doing with that is an MOU with them, a memo of understanding, where basically they say, yes, we agree that's what you'll compensate us at. We agree to that, to compensate them at the 20% rate. At that point, myself, board president, has to sign that MOU. Then they can, we can put that in the contract coming up, or we can not put it in the contract. It doesn't really impact us either way. So.
And they will be able to do head coaching or assistant coaching or both?
Anything. And it's not relegated to athletic positions. So say you had somebody that wanted to be the senior class advisor, secretary, they wanted to be a senior class advisor, and they work 37 and a half hours a week, which would give them virtually no time to devote to that without going into overtime, which we wouldn't pay. So they'd have to dock their time sometime, even if that was a possibility, which in many cases it's not, because you need those people in those positions for their full amount of time. So it would allow them to do that without sacrificing any time and receive some form of payment. And the good thing is we have a lot of good classified hourly staff qualified to do a lot of these different supplementals in the district that haven't pursued it to this point because they didn't think it was a possibility. So this all started in the last negotiation when we said we would consider hourly staff for supplemental positions, but we won't pay overtime. So it's consistent with that strategy. We're not going against that. We're actually finding a better way. And I think it's unique, somewhat unique. There are other districts in the state that do it, but it is somewhat unique to offer that. There are many districts in the state that said, we're not going to allow any hourly staff to coach or do any type of supplemental activity in our district. It's too much of a record-keeping headache to do, and we're just not going to do it. So we're going, I won't say above and beyond, but we're doing everything we can to get qualified people in those positions and allow them the opportunity to coach or devote their time to something that they may be very good at.
Is there a pecking order between a certified person that wants a coaching position, then how would that work?
Yeah, the teachers have a section in their contract that speaks to if they have experience at that in that area, it's 5 years within the district, then they've got priority over the position. We actually have a position this year that's filled based on that. They had 5 years in that sport, so they got priority over anybody else.
So that classified person, they'd be under them. It just have to be open.
Correct. But they classified, they don't have that portion in their contract at all.
They wouldn't even be able to bump like a volunteer.
Right. They don't have any preferential treatment at all in their contract for supplementals. Okay. We've had I'm not going to say an outbreak. It's the wrong term. We've had several cases of bed bugs. You know, we've had the dogs brought in. They did their thing, didn't find anything within the buildings, which Orkin is our pest control management company. They said it's very, very rare. In fact, they can only name a handful in which they found an entity that had bed bugs in it, a public entity. It's normally carried in, carried out, because they want to be on a host. And when nobody's in this building, there's not much here to host on. So,
host.
That's their term.
Yes.
So, but the protocol that we follow to make sure that that's streamlined, everybody understands it, including the parents, we're working on setting that up so we can have that in the handbook. So at the November meeting, you'll have that presented to you, modifications to the handbook. So, and it's going to be treated very much the same way as lice, which is addressed in the handbook briefly. But we'll probably expand on that a little bit just so everybody understands what our reaction is. And the other thing, just underneath my report, I didn't know if you were going to speak to it or not, but in November, we'll be after the election, so we'll know who the new board member or members are. Usually at this meeting, we invite them to come to that meeting to be a part of the executive sessions and things like that. I didn't know if that's still what you wanted to do.
That'd be great.
Okay, so any new members can come and be part of things.
Perfect.
One other thing is you have the Pepsi contract that's on here to be approved this evening. Pepsi contract is very similar to the way it's been written in the past. The only difference is instead of getting $10,000 a year over the next 3 years, we're getting $20,000 up front. That primarily goes to athletics for equipment needs and things like that, and the athletic program always has. That's why athletic director and myself are the ones that negotiate directly with Pepsi.
On that one, I just found, before we get to that, wait, did you find it? Yeah. 17, page 17?
The school.
Uh-huh, gotcha, yeah. Okay.
I saw that
yesterday. I found something nobody else found.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can tell it was a template they used. Okay, that's it for me. I tried.
Yeah, you didn't succeed.
Yeah, I know. So we will move to unfinished business. There's no unfinished business. We will move on to new business.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board to accept the resignation due to conflicts of Lucia McCafferty as RTI coordinator for the 2017-2018 school year effective 10 October 2017.
I second that.
Discussion.
I've never heard pregnancy referred to as a conflict, but that's what the conflict is. You'll be unavailable for a large part of the year.
Thank you. Call roll, please.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board award the following supplemental contracts to be paid in accordance with the adopted negotiated contract for the 2017-2018 school year. Please see the list below.
Second.
Discussion.
I did speak with the athletic director about positions on here, making sure those are the folks that we wanted, and clarification on a few of those, and they are, and I feel we have a good lineup there.
Great. Call roll, please.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the Massachusetts Board of Education approved the Pepsi contract.
I have it.
Yeah, you're fine. Give a second. Second. Discussion. We'll fix that error on page 17. Call roll, please.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Thank you for the improv, Mark.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve the following donations from Tony Price and from Valerie Emmerich.
Second.
I didn't get a chance when she was here earlier, but anybody that wants to donate anything to Madison Plains is greatly appreciated.
Right.
And from my perspective, especially somebody with ties to the school like her dad.
Well, right. Well, both the parents were too. I think that's just, I think that's pretty amazing, and I think that was really great of her to do that. So that was awesome. We'll have to take some pictures when we
agree.
Put on the flagpole.
And we'll probably, what we'll try to do is get the kids to put it out there.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Tony Price, he's a former superintendent for 35 years at a school district, and he and his wife travel all around the country now and go antiquing. When they find lightly used books, they buy them and they send them to school districts all around the country as part of their way of paying back.
Awesome.
He sent us B is for Buckeye, and he said that there was a stamp in it that was a collector's stamp. I promise you, it was not in here. unless it fell on the floor, but it's just a very nice gesture by somebody that really didn't have to do that. So we'll present this to the kids and ask Brad to do that this week for his library. So
that's great. It's nice when people take the school. Mm-hmm. Okay, call roll, please.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Okay. I make a motion that we enter into executive session at 9:32 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G, Section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated individual. And Section 5, matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes.
Second.
Call
This is good. I'd point out, for advice of council, they recommended that specifically the bolded areas are for employment and compensation of public employees or officials, and in particular, tonight, it's the superintendent and the treasurer.
And actually, section 3, because she's available by phone, that we will be calling. So we can add that, section 3, conferences with an attorney. Call roll, please, Tom.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0, executive session.
Okay, our next regular meeting will be held November 21st, 2017, at 7 p.m. in this room. We will adjourn the meeting for this evening, and we will be going into executive session and taking no further action.